Happy Monday and welcome back to another episode of the Saxo Market Call podcast. As always, I am your host. My name is Søren Otto, and today, as it is Monday, I am joined by our great FX and macro specialist, Charu Chanana, all the way from Singapore. Hi, Charu. How are you doing?
Hi, Søren. It's a rainy afternoon here in Singapore, which is quite a nice relief from the heat we've been having recently. So, yeah, feeling pleasant and good to be back with you.
That's nice. I mean, here it's the complete opposite. We are finally facing some springtime, and I think we have around 13 degrees and slightly sunny. So, yeah, really picking up from what it's been the last few weeks, and especially over Easter.
Yeah, I heard that.
Yeah, it's really nice. And what's also nice is to have you at least digitally here with me in the studio, because we have some quite interesting things to talk about today, Charu. Obviously, we are going to talk about the non-farm payrolls from Friday, because as it more or less seems like being the case, at least in 2024, that number came out stronger and more surprising than we expected. And then we're also going to talk about the CPI, the inflation figure that's coming out this week. We're going to touch upon the ECB meeting, and then we're also going to have a little bit of a look, as I feel like we always are, on the Japanese market still gaining momentum. So I think we should just jump into it, Charu, and let's start with this non-farm payroll, because once again it came out strong, and it also kind of sent some of the Fed members to push back, signaling caution on these rate cuts because it is so strong. Could you take us through what happened there?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I think we have been obviously seeing over the course of last week that pushback coming through from Fed members. Particularly, I think interesting was Kashkari, who actually said that there could be no rate cuts as well this year. That was, I think, the extreme end of hawkish sentiment that we got from the Fed members last week, which is, I think, I mean, of course, markets did not put a lot of weight to what Kashkari particularly was saying because of the fact that he is particularly a hawkish member of the Fed committee, and he does not vote this year. So, but of course, I mean, broadly speaking, we've been getting that pushback on easing expectations from Fed members. And then this, you know, the non-farm payroll report, it was a real blowout, right? 303K for the month of March, and the fastest pace of job growth in 10 months. Prior 2 months also revised higher. So, you know, certainly a strong report. But again, you know, the question is, how much relevance do you give to one particular data point, particularly with NFP? You know, we've seen that you see a big number when the report first comes out, but it tends to be revised downwards later on. So, I mean, again, yeah, I wouldn't be really giving a lot of, you know, focus to this one. And that's what the markets did. You know, we did see the US dollar running higher on the back of this report, but those gains were immediately reversed as well. I think the big story from last week really was geopolitics and gains in commodities and a sense that there is potentially a reflation trade coming back to the market. I think that is really something that we need to continue to watch how it develops from here.
And when you say reflation, basically what you mean is that inflation is bound to pick up again from going down a little bit.
It seems like, right? I mean, there are many different things that are moving. Of course, commodities, and that's not just oil, but, you know, copper, zinc. I mean, there's just so many things that are flying high at the moment. China story also seems to be finding a bottom. Again, we are not too bullish on that case here, but economic data is pointing to the fact that, you know, there's probably some stabilization ahead here for China. The manufacturing sector in generally, again, if you look at copper, which is seen as a barometer of global health. You know, it's called Dr. Copper. So it does look like the manufacturing sector is is also bottoming out. So all this is sending some signal to the markets that there could be risks of reflation. And you've seen markets adjust to that, actually. If you look at it in terms of markets' expectations for the Fed rate cuts this year, the probability of a July rate cut has also gone down now. It has been fully priced in for some time, but now it is priced in to less than a 90% probability. And overall for 2024, I mean, we've come down from expecting 7 rate cuts at the start of the year to now, markets were like expecting 3 rate cuts for some time, but now only 60 basis points of rate cuts are priced in. So that's just over 2 rate cuts, really. I think it's really important to watch where 10-year yields go, because we know they've broken a key resistance level of 4.35 there. And the next test there will really be 4.5%. So I think really interesting levels coming on the radar with this kind of a reflation trade coming through.
And I feel like the story has been all throughout 2024 that we're kind of expecting things to go bad, but then when we see the numbers, they aren't really as bad as people fear, and then we see this slashing of rate cut expectations, and then we're standing here trying to make sense of it all, as always, and that's why I'm really happy you're here. And to that regard, I can ask, we have the CPI number coming out this week. I think it's Wednesday, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yes.
Yeah, and once again, that'll probably be one of those numbers that we'll look at and say whether it points towards the economy being better than expected, or whether we're moving towards this slowing of the economy. But what's your take on that, and where do you think it takes risk sentiment, dollar, and the rest of the markets, etc.?
I mean, what's really interesting is that I still think that, despite being, at this point in the cycle where really after 5.5% kind of interest rates staying there for so long, it should have been a question about growth. But I think inflation still is the more important aspect here. And given the fact that we just discussed, right, so many Fed members have been pushing forward those expectations around Fed rate cuts. But if you look at particularly the comments from Federal Reserve Chairman, Powell, he has still stayed on the side of believing that the jump that we saw in inflation higher last 2 months, that was really a bump. He does not see that as really disrupting the disinflation trend. That's the signal we've got from his comments as latest as last week as well. So I think that narrative really will be put to test with that CPI release this week. If we do see inflation coming in softer, like markets expecting on a month-on-month basis about 0.3%, both for headline and core, if we do see that, then of course that narrative gets a lot of support, because that will kind of be a signal that we are still in that disinflation camp, and this whole pushback that has happened to the Fed rate cut expectations might be a little bit excessive, because as inflation continues to go down, we know that real yields are expanding, and that will start to weigh down on the economy in the months to come. But of course, I think the bigger risk here is that what if this is the third consecutive month of higher inflation, right? And particularly on the core side, I think headline inflation, if it's higher than expected, the Fed still has a way of ignoring it because they can focus on the core instead. But if we do see that jump higher in core, because what we know about the U.S. economy is that the housing side, the pricing pressures there, which should have, probably cooled because of these high interest rates, they are not reacting the way they have been, reacting in previous cycles. So that's where my curiosity really is. Where do the housing prices go? Where does that take the core inflation print? And whether we get that third consecutive month of a jump higher in inflation? And then how does the narrative from Fed Chair Powell really changes on the back of that?
And obviously, all investors more or less throughout the world are paying attention to what happens in the US, because it has the tendency to push markets all the way around, all around the globe, basically. But we also have a meeting in the European Central Bank. I have to admit that the exact date escapes me, but but what are you expecting from that meeting? I guess we aren't really expecting any rate cuts.
Perhaps not right away, yes. But let me step back a little bit. I didn't address your question about where the dollar goes really, right? So, you know, I think, I mean, I wanted to link up the dollar and the ECB expectation for this week as well. So, you know, while there are signals that the dollar has really priced in a lot of that, you know, hawkish elements that are coming out of from the Fed speech. And there could be a bearish case to be made for the dollar for this week, given that, you know, markets are expecting a softer CPI. We also get the Fed minutes from the last meeting this week, and there could be clearer signals on what discussions went around regarding the tapering of quantitative tightening. So I think even that is in consideration, and generally the positioning in dollar is looking like it is, you know, getting stretched on the long side. So there is a case to be made for bearish dollar this week. But particularly, I mean, I think there'll be some support coming through for the dollar. And that's because we have the ECB meeting and the Bank of Canada meeting as well. And both of them are, I would think, you know, they have the potential to really shift dovish a little bit this week, which could lend support to the US dollar as well. So when I talk particularly about the European Central Bank, as you just asked me, there's a lot of evidence that within this second quarter, we could see the inflation in Eurozone really going back to that 2% target or below that rather. So if you look at last week, we got German inflation, we got French inflation, which was quite a bit softer than the previous months. There was, you know, also the Spanish one. All of that is certainly showing softer prints and increasing the conviction that we are on the path to getting back to 2% pretty quickly here. So I think there is a clear case for the European Central Bank to acknowledge that. They have been talking about a June rate cut. It seems like it is more or less priced in. And the conversation could also move from here to the fact that, you know, how much, you know, about the magnitude of rate cuts rather than the start of rate cuts. So I think, you know, the dovishness signals right now is a very good timing for the ECB to give that signal as well, because the economy is stabilizing a little bit. So they want to kind of give that signal that they will be cutting rates at a time when the economy is a little bit more stable, because that kind of spells victory for them on bringing inflation back to target, rather than spelling any economic concerns really, and that being the reason for their rate cuts. So that dovish, you know, tilt from the European Central Bank, I think that could be supportive of the dollar this week.
So, on an overall level, do you expect that the US CPI figure or the ECB meetings will have the biggest impact on the markets? Do you think that that kind of depends on what comes out of them?
I think the market positioning tends to obviously be more stretched, especially, you know, given what the current scenario is around that inflation print. So certainly knee-jerk reactions could be more significant if we do see a big, you know, miss or a big higher than expected jump in the inflation print in US CPI. I think so that comes on Wednesday, and the day after Thursday is the ECB meeting, which could potentially has, you know, it could potentially have the room to really reverse the moves that we see post CPI. So I think that's why it's important to keep in mind that we have these two important events this week.
Definitely. And could you just repeat when is the ECB meeting, just so the listeners out there don't have to look anything up, because I can't remember it.
It's on Thursday.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, Jar. Let's jump closer to where you are, and a country you'll actually visit next week, I'm told. Japan, because it continues to be an interesting case. Obviously, we did this thematic episode about the historic economy and this final rate hike that they did a few weeks back. Now we're approaching the earnings season. Is there anything that we should be aware of, look out for when we talk about the Japanese market?
Right. Sorry, and it's always great to revisit the Japanese market. Japanese yen also, it's been so much in focus, right? Knocking at that 152 level, as we were just discussing in our internal meeting as well, right? It seems like it's going nowhere, but certainly shows how bearish the market is on the Japanese yen, despite that move that we saw from the Bank of Japan in March. And from what I'm seeing, from a very trader perspective, if there are some of those traders listening into our podcast today, it seems like the Japanese market has become a clear case of response to what happens in terms of the US markets, the Fed expectations and the likes, right? They certainly are completely ignoring what's happening on the Bank of Japan side, and just reacting to that move in Japanese yen or US markets overnight. Now, why I think it's a particularly an interesting time again for Japanese equities, like you rightly said, we are entering the earnings season as well there, and it's an important earnings season because for Japan, for Japanese companies, the year ends on March 31. So, what they'll be reporting now over the course of Q2 will be their full year earnings, really. And some of the surveys have been hinting to a strong earnings growth momentum there. Part of the reason could obviously be the weakness of the yen. But there are also signals that, those higher wage growth numbers that we saw coming through in the spring wage negotiations, because of which the Bank of Japan really decided to exit its negative interest rates. So that strong wage growth there is helping the companies also make progress on passing through their cost pressures. So there is a positive spiral taking place there. And what I'm really looking forward to here in this earnings season is the how the shareholder returns have really evolved. So going back to that episode that we did, the thematic podcast episode on Japan, we talked about the structural tailwinds for Japanese equities. And one of the big factors there is the corporate governance reforms, where the regulator is actually pushing Japanese companies to announce more dividends and more buybacks. So I am looking forward to hear what those companies did over the last year. And I think that can bring around another positive sentiment for Japanese equities for now, as long as the Japanese yen is weak. Certainly a time to obviously evaluate where it goes from here if the Japanese yen strengthened on the back of Fed turning dovish. But as long as we can postpone that, I think there's this momentum in Japanese stocks that's still continuing.
All right. Always interesting to follow the Japanese market, because so much is going on, and as you say, it becomes this extension of the US. Chara, before we close out, I want to ask you, because you are, after all, also our FX expert. So in that realm, what's the most interesting currency to pay attention to this week? You'd think maybe the US dollar, but you know more than me.
Yes, but I mean, when it comes to the US dollar, the difficulty that most people face, the clients that I speak with or some of our colleagues as well, that if you want to be short the US dollar, what do you buy? It's really a difficult position to be in because of that US exceptionalism story, right? But Soren, one of the things that we probably didn't cover in a lot of detail today was the expectations around Bank of Canada. So I think it's a good time for me to bring that in as well, because for me, that is potentially one of the big event risks this week. We saw a sharp slowdown in the Canadian jobs growth on Friday, and while that itself was a disappointing signal for Canadian dollar, what also happened is that the US jobs growth came out very strong. So that sharp contrast has played out quite a bit for dollar CAD, USD versus Canadian dollar. We saw it hitting the year-to-date highs. And I mean, I think if the Bank of Canada meeting, which is again this week on Wednesday, if they were to take a more dovish stance as well, I would think that there's potentially quite a bit of room for the Canadian dollar to give. given that the market has only priced in a June rate cut from the Bank of Canada with 70% probability. So there's some room to, you know, play catch up there if they were to signal a June rate cut. So I'd be, yeah, I'd be watching dollar CAD, as I said.
All right. Good stuff, Charo. I think that was everything for today. Thank you so much, as always, Charo, for coming in and making us all a little bit smarter here.
Always pleasure to speak with you, Soren.
Likewise. And then I don't have anything more to say than on behalf of Charo, the Saxo Market Call podcast, everybody here at Saxo, my name is Soren Otto. Thank you so much for listening, and we will be back anytime soon. But until then, happy trading.